welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
Hot stuff.
Super hot stuff.
What's up, guys? Hey, this is Luke Johnson, as always, with Owen Main.
Hey, Luke.
And Andy Stevens, unfortunately, is not here tonight to join us for our Fansmanship podcast.
What are you talking about?
What?
Andy's not here?
Andy's not here. Nope. No Andy Stevens. Brother, we wish you the best. We hope to see you soon. He's out doing his thing.
Got to do your thing around the holidays. That's part of the deal.
Yes, you do. But hey, guys, we want to welcome you again. Hey, if you're from San Luis Obispo County, San Luis Obispo area, you know that we live in a beautiful place. The weather's been marvelous.
Slow town?
While others are snowed in or experiencing some harsh weather across the world, San Luis Obispo County is sitting pretty happy in their warm weather.
Yeah, Luke, I took a bike ride yesterday, and I also looked up today the temperature, the forecast for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
What is that, Owen?
Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
70 degrees.
70 degrees.
Christmas Eve, a sunny 60 degrees.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're not complaining.
Yeah, this is the reason why a lot of people come out here. Rather be poor and living in sunny California. Hey, guys, but we do have some good stuff to talk about tonight. We do have the NFL. As you guys know, Tim Tebow does lose, unfortunately, or fortunately for some, 41-23.
Breaking news on this Sunday.
To the New England Patriots. So we will talk a little bit about Tebow, as always, like most people do right now, and talk some NFL.
Absolutely. And we know that it's Tebow's second loss of the year. Moving on to the NBA, too, there's a lot going on. The Lakers and Clippers play, I think, tomorrow in the first preseason game for both teams.
Yeah.
Chris Paul's going to be playing. And the Lakers today signed the big lefty from Notre Dame, Troy Murphy.
Troy Murphy.
See if he can contribute.
Let's go ahead and just move on from that point. Hey, but it's interesting to imagine Chris Paul in a Clipper jersey.
Yeah, it'll be weird, especially it kinda makes
sense.
The Lakers.
It seemed to make sense with him in a Laker jersey. I mean, all these great players, and here he is a Clipper. So it's going to be definitely interesting to see that game.
The Clippers are must-see TV this year.
Yes, absolutely. You know, him lobbing to B. Griff is some serious stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, we have the NCAAs to talk about. Excuse me. We do have Kobe's divorce as well. Yes, Kobe Bryant has him and his wife are filing for divorce. Another Laker point that we do want to discuss tonight, because where does that leave L.A.?
And we're not trying to get up anybody's personal business too much, but how, if at all, will it affect it? Now, if you ask Kobe, I'm sure he'd say not at all. We'll talk a little bit about it.
Sure.
Moving on from the pros to the college ranks, and we haven't talked a lot outside of Cal Poly this year, and one of the reasons is because the Cal Poly men's basketball team has been doing such a decent job here and such a great job over the first 11 games of their season. They whooped up on Fresno State last night by 18 or 19 points, led by David Hansen, who scored his 1,000th career point last night, and Amari Furman and Will Taylor. You know, it's kind of the same group of guys. Odister came in for 6 minutes and scored 6 points, and we'll talk a little bit about Cal Poly. Well, we're also going to talk about other stuff in the NCAA, Luke.
Yeah, we are going to go ahead and Owen's going to reminisce on his childhood with college football. You know, that used to be a time when all of us watched college football during the holidays, especially. But where are those great bowl games? I mean,
especially on New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, yeah. I mean, where is it now? It seems to be a figment of our imagination. So we're going to go ahead and talk about that as well. Those great days, and maybe even muse on just some personal items. I was just complaining to Owen that I put on the 20 pounds since being married, and. You know, what is Loco going to do to take care of that? You know, we'll talk about that even.
It is the new year.
It is the new year. So, hey, guys, we will be back in a moment. Stand by for a commercial break.
A commercial break. If you haven't heard the commercial yet, you need to hear it now.
Yeah.
We've got a kind of a consistent sponsor on the show.
It's, Put Me In Coach. It's really a great device. You know, Owen has used it. I've seen an incredible change in his physique, guys.
It's pretty motivational. We'll be back on Fansmanship.com.
Let me guess, you're that Dungeons & Dragons champion whose parents forced into a sport of their choice. If so, then Put Me In Coach, an interactive 4D sport dance workout gaming experience by legendary dance queen Richard Simmons, is the perfect thing for you.
Now kick and jump and kick and jump and catch the pass and tackle and shoot and kick and jump and catch the pass. All right, way to go, team.
The fourth dimension is
fabulous.
It will take you from pine sitter to sideline star, two-stepping sideline grooves that will even make the dance team resent you. The king of building self-confidence has joined forces with the legendary pine rider Chutkey Atkins to develop this once-in-a-lifetime program. For a limited time, you'll receive a sweat-stained glitter Simmons wig, flashing clip-on nipple piercing, and pink or purple tanning thong for absolutely free. This is good while supplies last. To order, log on to www.putmeincoachatrichardsimmonsfabulous4dimensions.com.
If it worked for Tim Tebow, it'll work for you too.
Hi, my name's Chucky Atkins, and I approve this message.
What's up, guys? Hey, Fansmanship is back. We are ready to talk some NFL, some Tim Tebow. Yo.
If it worked for Tim Tebow, it'll work for you, too.
It'll work.
According to Richard Simmons.
Well, not according to Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots.
Or Tom Brady, yeah. the Patriots Patriots went all Walter Sobchak on Tim Tebow today. There was
some definite... you could tell on the sidelines. I mean, I was watching the end of the game here, and you know, it's 41-23. Obviously, it's a W for the Patriots. Tim Tebow kind of runs out of bounds, and there's a couple defensive players there on New England side, and it looked like they were saying something to Tebow. I mean, obviously, this is the first team to kind of knock off this, you know,
the Tebow juggernaut,
this preaching juggernaut. You know, I mean, this is a big deal.
Well, you know, it is and it isn't. Tebow scored how many points? 23. So 23, yeah. Tebow's offense put up 23 against the Vikings either last week or a couple weeks ago. They put up maybe a few more points than that, but their defense scored a touchdown in the meantime. So I think what changes about the way people perceive Tebow? Nothing, in my opinion. I think, you know, for me, Tebow's going to give you somewhere between 15 and 25 points probably. On average, and if your defense can hold the other team to 10 or something like that, like the Broncos defense has, then they're going to be fine. If the defense gives up 40 something points, obviously they're not going to win. And I think this team goes as the defense goes, and Tebow is developing. He's a young quarterback. He's actually getting better. I saw today, you know, he's throwing passes that look a little bit better, but he's still not consistent. He's still not exactly where he needs to be. He's a rookie quarterback. He's not where Andy Dalton is. He's not where Cam Newton is. Okay? But is he developing? Yeah, he's developing because he's getting an opportunity to. And good for the Broncos for developing him. I think the whole, you know, the hyperbole is just way over the top, though.
Yeah, and the reality is you know, Tim Tebow still is 7-2 as a starting quarterback.
Not bad.
We ain't, you know, that isn't too shabby. You know, he did lose to the New England Patriots. It seems to me, you know, everyone loses to the Patriots. They won 11 out of 14 mm-hmm. games, including, you know, teams like San Diego early in the season who were hot favorites. They beat up on a good Oakland Raiders team. The Jets they beat up on. They beat up on or played a close game with Pittsburgh. That came down to the wire. Beat the Jets again at the Meadowlands, which is a big deal. I mean, so this is a New England team that can walk on in and you know, beat anybody on any given night.
And here's the thing about New England is that they can score on anybody, including Denver's very good defense. And they upped the tempo today. They went no huddle for most of, if not all, the game. And if you get enough possessions against the Denver defense, then maybe there's some cracks in it. The nice thing about having Tebow in the past is that they've been able to run the ball so much that they've limited the number of possessions the other teams had and been able to give up, you know, less than 20 points in a lot of games. This game, they weren't able to do that. And of course, you know, you saw the result. 41-23.
And I'm wondering, Owen, you know, how much of this loss is reflective upon that what seems to be dynamic defense over there in Denver, and really how much does the loss maybe in essence work in favor for Tim Tebow? Because the argument has been
in favor of Tebow lovers.
Well, the argument has been that Tebow has a great, you know, gifted defense, and that's why he's been able to stick in games. And yes, they've been playing fantastic football. But I brought up last week that when Tebow officially took the helm from Orton, that defense responded. Everyone responded. People seemed to believe Tim Tebow. Today, obviously, they were beat up handedly. You know, maybe that defense isn't as great as everyone says they are. And Tim Tebow is the guy who's winning games for the New England, or excuse me, for the Denver Broncos.
Well, and you know, one game does not a team make. I mean, we saw the Packers today lose to the Chiefs. So, you know, every team can have a bad game, and I think that's a lot of what happened to the Broncos D today. That being said, you look at Tebow's numbers, and here they are. He was 50% passing, 11 for 22. He did throw 40 times last week. So, you know, you can see kind of the progression, the back and forth. He was 11 for 22, 194 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. So he's not losing you the game, but you need other people to win the game for you if you're the Broncos most of the time. You know, and of course, he's been able to pull a rabbit out of his hat but the last few times. But you know, he had an average day, and he's, you know, probably in the end an average quarterback.
Well, and to be fair to Tim Tebow, to be fair, you know, to Tim Tebow,
which is better than I thought he would. Sorry to interrupt. Which is better than I thought he would be. He's an average quarterback right now.
Yeah, and to be fair to the guy,
good for him.
You know, and to be fair to the guy, this really is his first, you know, season that he's actually had, you know, quality action. He was kind of thrown in there. The guy's still young in his NFL career, and to be honest, he has looked much better the last 2 weeks throwing the football. Not saying it's been, you know, incredible stuff he's been doing. No, it's not. I mean, today I was watching him on a simple 10-yard out, and he overthrew his receiver by, like, I mean, just astronomical, you know, amounts of yards. But
yeah, there's some simple stuff he's got to get way better
at. But I'm, you know, last week, for instance, against a pretty good Bears defense, close game, Tebow's down 10-0, including overtime in the fourth quarter, he was 18 for 24, 191 yards and a touchdown. So can he throw the football? I mean, that was a pretty good Chicago Bears defense. I mean, Urlacher was surprised. Briggs was surprised. You know, this is a Bears team that is not some scummy defensive squad. I mean, they are a legitimate defensive team. And Tebow threw all over them in the fourth quarter and, you know, in that overtime. So is he great? No, by no means. Is he average? Yes. But doesn't mean that he couldn't come back next season and actually be able to throw with some consistency. Yeah. You know,
I think that's, for me, more than the wins, because honestly, the wins I think have less to do with the confidence I have in him at this point than how he's throwing the ball. I think more than the wins, how he's throwing the ball has proven to people that maybe he does have the ability to come out next year and run a more traditional style of offense. Now, he's always going to have the scrambling ability, and that's, you know, the thing that Steve Young always had. But Steve Young could also run kind of a more traditional style of offense, and the Broncos aren't quite there yet. He's shown that maybe they could get there, though, and for that, you know, I think we say good for him. Bronco fans shouldn't be disappointed, even if they don't make the playoffs this year, although they're still in the driver's seat. I think they have the I think they have the tiebreaker over the Raiders right now.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this.
I think the Raiders lost today.
They did in a close one there to Detroit. You know, I'm looking at this thread here underneath the score here on NFL.com. And,
what, like comments?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And there's a fan here, and you know, and I got a feel for Tim Tebow. You know, you know, for me personally, you know, we all have our beliefs and our faith and whatever that may be, or our lack of faith. But, you know, we all have, here in America, we all have the choice to have those things and the freedoms to have those things. Tim Tebow obviously is not ashamed of his Christian faith. This is a guy who does share it. And I'm sure even after the loss, he will share it. You know, this is a guy who seems to be a humble guy who just loves people, loves to be around teammates and believes in his Christian faith. But here's a fan here, or excuse me, a lack of fan, who says, guess it was God's day off. So he had the Pats bring Tebow to his knees, or maybe he was reliving his date with his BF. I don't really get that part. But the point being is that there's a lot of fans who love seeing Tebow lose because of that faith. You know, Owen, how much of that is, you know, not to sort of pinpoint Tebow and make this some anti-Christian show, but how much of that is Tebow's fault or not his fault? How much of that is Tebow asked for in response? Because, you know, he has been very unashamed of his faith and, you know, every question is, you know, God this, God that, instead of just simply, you know, answering people's questions with X and X's and O's.
Right. Well, and it's who he is. And I think anybody who talks to him, I mean, I don't think, you know, I don't know what Champ Bailey's faith is, but Champ Bailey's behind him. And he's behind him because when he says stuff, he says it really believing what he says. And when he looks at, you know, the Broncos and he says, I believe this team's going to figure out a way, it's because he actually does. I thought, you know, I'm on the Yahoo, recap page, and there's some comments below. I think there's one on here that is a really good point. It says that it's hilarious that some of you equate someone who roots against the Broncos as a God hater. Does this mean that if you live in Green Bay or Baltimore or Dallas, if you're a Christian, you are now required to root exclusively for Denver? You do realize how ludicrous that is, right? And I think that's the place that it goes over the top. And honestly, I haven't seen a lot of that. I think, you know, a lot of the coverage of that is people assuming that that's the case for a lot of people. You know, I think that is ludicrous if that's what's happening or if that's what people think. You know, hey, I can like a lot of different players. I enjoy watching Blake Griffin play. It doesn't mean I'm a Clippers fan. I root for the guy to succeed. I enjoy watching, who else do I enjoy watching? I like Dirk. I was glad to see him win a championship. Almost as happy as Flula. But that doesn't mean I have to be a Mavericks fan. And it doesn't mean that every game the Mavericks play hinges on whether Dirk does well or not. Of course, he's an important cog. But it's a team sport. And so, you know, the hyperbole too high or too low isn't something I'm really ready to buy into at this point. And I think anytime you insert religion into an argument, you start to see some of these really, really highly charged back and forth posts on message boards, and people like to get pumped up about it.
But you know what's funny, Owen, is, you know, we live in America. We all know this is a place where it's free to, you know, worship.
Last time I checked.
And, you know, I don't, it's not for me to really care about whether or not you have a similar faith to Tebow or not. But the reality is that we live in America. We are very diverse, both culturally and spiritually, so on and so forth. And for Tim Tebow, he's a Christian. Wake up. We live in America. There's a lot of Christians in America. There's a lot of Catholics in America. There's a lot of, you know, Muslims in America. I mean, this is just who we are, you know, and why are we surprised when we live in America where we have free speech, when a guy talks about his faith? I mean, it's not surprising.
Yeah. It's not surprising. I think,
come on. I mean,
I think where the media gets a little bit, and I was talking about this earlier, I think where the media gets a little bit sideways about it is if, you know, hey, Tim, talk about the game today. Well, then he starts, you know, talking about his religion. And,
well, that's
and
the answer then.
And that's fine.
They have to get over it.
Yeah.
That's the fine. Answer. The guy has the right to answer however he wants to answer.
He does.
You know, and until I see John Fox walking up and saying, hey, guys, I want to apologize for Tim Tebow because he never answers your questions correctly, then.
No, it's, yeah, right. Absolutely. You know, Shaq never answered their questions either.
He never did. He was great at always spinning those questions, wasn't he?
Shaq, tell me.
And he was funny.
Shaq, yeah. Well, my teammates did really good. I like your suit.
Yeah.
You know, can I?
I feel like going and eating.
I'm gonna run for sheriff at LA County next year.
I feel like going and eating some Taco Bell.
Can I put in a plug for my?
Hey, who smells like cheese in here?
I think he did say that.
Did he?
And it's not me. All right, listen, we're gonna come back and rolling into the NBA. We'll talk a little bit about the season starting. Of course, the Lakers for all you Lakers fans, yep. And Laker haters
hey,
out there.
And the Clippers, too. We'll talk some Clippers.
LA NBA basketball is yes, going to be as exciting as it has been. Or, excuse me, as interesting as it has been.
Yeah, that's a good way to put
for
it.
For the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, I think.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be a fun thing.
Let's talk about it.
We'll be back.
Peace.
Fansmanship.com podcast. Scratch it out, LJ.
Yeah.
What up, everybody?
What up? Hey, guys.
Fansmanship Podcast.
Fansmanship Podcast is back. Hold that beat for a second. Oh. Guys, hey, welcome back to the Fansmanship Podcast. I don't even know what just happened. What was that?
My mind is blown.
We are just blown away right now. NBA, we all know, is back.
The National Basketball Association.
Session. 66-game schedule is going to begin on December 25th, Christmas Day.
Luke, I know we have some specific things to talk about when it comes to the NBA.
We do.
But I did want to ask you a question. Did you get a chance to read any of the stuff about David Stern this week or see any of his interviews when they were talking about and asking him about conflict of interest with the trades that have gone on? We know that in the long run, the Clippers benefited, and not only did the Lakers not get Chris Paul, but really as a direct result of Stern blocking the trade when and how he did, the Lakers lost Lamar Odom for all intents and purposes. They were forced to trade the guy. Now, they didn't. Did they have to trade Lamar? No, but they did because Lamar pitched a fit because he found out about the trade that was basically done and started crying about it. Now, you know, you can feel for Lamar, but in the long run, Stern's basically blocking the trade when he did made Lamar do what he did, and the Lakers lost Lamar without getting anybody in return.
Yeah, I'm trying to sense out the direction of your sort of rant there. Guys,
I'm just asking, did you get the chance to see it?
I did, but I'm wondering what the whole musing was about them losing Lamar Odom. I think this is coming from a Laker fan who's upset that you lost Lamar Odom. Also upset because you did not get Chris Paul. But
Lamar wouldn't have been all ticked off if Stern wouldn't have blocked. If he would have blocked the trade outright,
yes,
right from the beginning, then he wouldn't have been mad.
I did see a bit with on Dan Patrick Live. He did have a sort of a Stern interview.
With Lamar or with David Stern?
David Stern.
Uh-huh.
Stern seemed pretty stern. Stern seemed stern in his stance. You know that this was not that it was a really interesting predicament that the NBA was in, because the NBA in essence does own OKC.
Yeah, and Stern.
Excuse me. Yes, the Hornets.
New Orleans. And the interview I saw with Stern, he's like, "What conflict of interest? I don't see a conflict of interest." It's like, seriously, you don't see a conflict of interest, Commissioner? Really? Really?
As much as I don't trust the NBA, I kind of get what Stern's trying to say. He's, you know, whether it's true or not. Look, you know, here's the thing: is this was a trade. It wasn't in the bag. It was
in the bag with the Hornets GM who thought he was operating under the power that he had, and apparently the NBA hasn't been doing a very good job of running the Hornets.
Look,
if he didn't know.
Well, look. Here's the point. Mitch Kupchak wants to pursue a trade, right?
Or Dell Demps wants to pursue a trade, yeah. Okay.
But how much is Jerry Buss involved?
Jerry Buss anymore?
No. Don't say anymore. We know that Andrew Bynum would be gone if Jerry Buss was not around.
Jim Buss.
Excuse me, Jim Buss.
Jerry Buss's son.
Yes, if Jim Buss was not around,
Bynum would probably be gone.
He'd be gone.
Yeah, or he wouldn't have got like a $70 million contract, yeah.
He'd be gone. So owners play a huge part, right?
Okay.
Okay, so you're saying that
with their own team's best interests at heart. Yes. Owners play a huge part.
So tell me how tell me, I mean, this is an essence of an evaluation of Chris Paul's talents. Now, yes, the original trade, I think it was absolutely ludicrous.
It had Gasol and Odom going, which would have made the Lakers worse. So I'm not saying I'm mad from a Lakers perspective. I actually think the Lakers, you know, if they just wouldn't have done anything, would have been better. I'm saying that they lost Odom and they shouldn't have traded Odom. They didn't get anything.
They shouldn't have traded Odom. They should have made a point and not traded Lamar Odom.
Like they didn't trade Kobe a couple years ago?
Yeah. Kobe was, you know, guys, he's been pissed off about all this. By the way, there's another thing about Kobe we got to talk about. But Kobe's been pissed off in regards to just the X and O's as far as trading Lamar Odom is concerned. He went off on a rant during their media day. You can find an article on fansmanship.com about that. But, I mean, Kobe Bryant made a point. He kind of joked. He said, you know, I couldn't even force my way out of here a few years back.
So how did Lamar do it in like 3 days?
How did Lamar do it?
In like 3 days. He stayed
Bad
home
move.
For practice for like 2 or 3 days.
What's going on in LA? I mean, you have this sort of ridiculous approach to their team direction, especially in Kobe's twilight years. And then now Kobe's also going through a divorce. Unfortunately, he's split up with his wife, or reports have said Kobe Bryant is splitting up with his wife, Vanessa.
He's splitting up. They filed papers in December. The thing should be finalized in January. And really, you know, the important thing to me is, how is it going to affect his play on the court? I don't know how much it will.
This is not the National Enquirer, but But to say that a divorce, which can get very messy. I mean, Michael Jordan went through this.
His seems pretty clean, though. Like, they filed the papers together through, like, the same attorney. Like, they're not fighting.
Yeah.
They have been fighting, it sounds like.
But I see your point. Kobe Bryant is a competitor. I don't want to get off on that tangent. But to think that it's not going to affect him in some way. He's already pissed off about the team's direction. He's aging. Yeah. He's nearing 34 years old. Mm-hmm. He doesn't got much left in the tank. It's obvious.
16 years in.
Or 15. Yeah, he's up there.
He was 17 when he joined the league, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was just almost going to clear 18. Yeah. God, he's been in the league for a long time.
Yeah, that's 16 years. Yeah.
For most players, they'd be like 40 by now.
Right.
Or almost.
Right.
39.
For 16 years in the league, right.
And Kobe's 34. But the point
he's
being,
in the playoffs every year.
You know, Kobe doesn't have much left, you know, in my opinion. He's got a couple years left in the tank. It was obvious last year. He played a lot less minutes than he has recently, you know, in recent years.
Appropriately so.
And appropriately so. He's still got two great big men there. Maybe I should reverse that. Not great. He's got two good big men there.
Correct.
Pau Gasol, who's a soft sort of face-up forward, as we all know, does have a sweet little 15-foot game.
And he can rebound.
And he can catch the ball. He catches the ball.
Sure.
Andrew Bonham, who actually, for the first time last year, which is kind of interesting, guys, Andrew Bonham never could stay healthy, it seemed like, whenever they wanted to make a playoff run. And then they actually win it kind of with him playing sort of hurt. They win two in a row. And then this last year, he's finally kind of healthy and he's surging in the postseason. And they get swept in the second round by the Mavericks. I'm thinking to myself, really, how important is Andrew Bonham?
Yeah, there's some personality difficulties. And for me, and we can talk all we, I mean, I could talk for 5 hours about the Lakers. But
we'll talk
for me,
a little bit.
For me, the Lakers lost a lot of, I think, kind of their future. They mortgaged a lot of their future on the artist formerly known as Ron Artest.
Met
a world peace. He's a personality who they took on. They think Kobe can handle him, and Kobe did and has been handling him for some time. But they didn't judge what it would do to guys like Lamar. They didn't judge what it would do to guys like other players on the team. Pau Gasol. How did he respond to Artest? Now for 1 year it worked, right? So would you do it again? Probably, because they won a championship with Artest. What I'm saying is I think they could have won that same championship with Trevor Ariza, and they would still have a guy like Ariza who is still springy. The Lakers don't have anybody who's springy. They don't have anybody who's going to dunk on you.
And unfortunately,
Matt Barnes isn't going to – I mean, he'll go to the basket, but he's not springy. Odom's not – you know, Odom wasn't springy.
No.
Gasol's not springy.
The only player they had who was springy without Ariza was Shannon Brown, who they've lost.
And Kobe's not going to the basket like he used to.
Kobe's got to hit that follow-up.
So there's no athleticism there to do what they need to do. They're a bunch of slow old guys.
Bynum's always one tweak away from –
At the guards, at the two and three especially.
Fisher's like 55 now, or so at least it seems.
Yeah, they need to figure out a point guard if they're not going to get Paul. But the idea is, you know, from my perspective, that the Ariza for Artest thing was not an improvement. And in the long run, it's kind of the start of their downfall. Even though they won a championship that year afterwards.
Well, they had a great team.
Meta World Peace isn't going to dominate this
year. It wasn't Meta World. They had a great team already.
They did have a great team.
They were, you know, Kobe was still in
Meta hit a few shots, but that
Kobe was kind of right at the tail end of his prime, so he was still playing that type of basketball.
Well, the year before, Ariza was playing awesome against
And Gasol, the Magic. Gasol was he seemed a little more confident in the post. And I actually agree with you about Ariza, because if you've watched Ariza's career,
I wrote an article about it. Sorry to interrupt, on Fansmanship, you know, I think in March or April of last year.
If you've watched Ariza's career since he left L.A., he really hasn't lived up to the hype as far as his contract was concerned that he signed with the Hornets originally. I mean, he's still kind of a springy defensive player, but he's not. He really fit into that system.
He fit so great on the Lakers.
He was Threeza. He was the guy who hit the three occasionally. He filled the lane, and he could get up. And I think Kobe liked him a lot.
And he could guard.
And he was likable.
Whoever you wanted him to guard. Kobe didn't have to guard that guy. An old Kobe can't guard that guy. And he can guard guys that Artest can't.
And I don't care what Meta World tries to do as far as changing his image is concerned. And I think that some Laker fans like Ron. Of course you do, because anytime you have Ron and he's not breaking into the stands, it's nice to have a guy like that because he's tough. But I'm sorry, I think Threeza was so likable I think Kobe liked him. He was just that guy that really fit in. I mean,
he wasn't a personality, and on a team that is so chock full of personalities, you need fill-in guys. You need guys who understand their role and fit in. And Artest is still trying to figure out his role. He's still kind of baffled by it, I think.
When they lost Ariza, it was like John McCain when he selected Sarah Palin for his run. He shot himself in the foot, and they won one more finals, but it weakened, you know, their roster.
Yeah, you don't have youth, you don't have springiness. Your payroll is
and high. I'm almost wondering if you keep youth, you know, obviously you keep Trevor Ariza. You know, you have some of those young guys like that on that team still. I wonder if guys like Shannon Brown even are like, there's a future here. Let's stay here.
Shannon Brown and the signing of Steve Blake, those are things that people thought would be a lot better than they were, I think. Steve Blake hasn't exactly, you know, earned all of his money. Shannon Brown sees Steve Blake there, and he's like, I'm better than Steve Blake. Shannon Brown, before he got hurt last year, was lights out. Yeah. It's a shame that he got hurt. I think he's ready to have kind of a Derek Fisher, get hurt for a little while and have a resurgence at some point as far as your shot goes. And Fish hurt his foot, and all he could do was shoot for like 2 months back in like 2001 or something.
Well, according to, as far as what I've read, as far as, you know, Shannon Brown's concerned, the Suns are going to start Brown. I think he might have a big year there.
Yeah, with Nash on the other hand. That'll be good for him. Setting him up. And Luke, real quick, one other thing about the NBA that I did want to cover, Luke clued me into this, and that's about the Denver Nuggets, aka the Thuggets.
The Denver Thuggets.
Yep. And
Birdman.
The Birdman.
I like the Birdman. I think he signed elsewhere this offseason, though.
But
you don't like the Birdman?
One guy I don't like is Kenyon Martin. Never won anything in his life. Is not.
He's tough as nails, but
no, he's not that tough. He talks a lot of trash. Makes you don't a lot think of faces, he's tough. Yells at guys. Yells at guys when he's
when
down.
I watch him like punch people like just to get a rebound. You don't think that's tough?
No, I think that's mentally weak. And I also
so you must have thought John Stockton was mentally weak because he was known for elbowing guys.
John Stockton won, and John Stockton never stood over somebody and yelled in their
face.
Well,
he was too short to stand over somebody.
Okay, fine. John Stockton never stood there and yelled in somebody's face and showed them up when he was down by 15 in a playoff
game. Okay, and anytime your nickname is Kmart,
there's an issue.
No offense, but Kmart's gone downhill.
There's lots of times that the Nuggets have been down by 15 or 20, and Martin will get a random dunk, and he'll sit there and yell and scream and talk
trash.
Yeah,
what is that?
Yeah, it's Kenyon Martin, and that's why I don't like
him. And J.R. Smith and all those guys.
So Kmart, J.R. Smith, and
Wilson Chandler, who's a good player.
Wilson Chandler, who is surprising. They all went and did what, Luke? They went and signed in.
Okay, it's not like these guys need money. Okay, but the point being, okay, they went and they signed in China. Now
they're going to show those NBA owners that I can play basketball somewhere else, like Darren Williams went to Turkey. Darren Williams had an opt-out clause.
Darren Williams was a smart businessman and did it the way you're supposed to. Why? Because he's a superstar and he knows how to do things.
And he had an opt-out clause.
But he knew to do that. These three Thuggets,
knuckleheads.
Yeah, this is why the Thuggets never won a thing, and why Carmelo got the heck out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is why Carmelo was like, "Get me out now."
Yeah.
You know.
Tell me what they did.
These guys signed a contract in China. These are NBA players. No offense to China's professional league, but they signed a contract in China with no opt-out clause.
Shut your mouth. Say what?
No opt-out clause.
Say what?
Yeah. No opt-out clause.
Say what?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I think...
it's actually funny, though. Kenyon Martin
moron.
Stuck over there. Yeah, Kenyon Martin stuck over there.
It's get out of here.
It's kind of funny.
It's funny if...
It's
if
really funny.
It's not funny if you're a Nuggets fan and you think your team's going to be like deep
because,
and pretty good.
Because they actually were pretty good last year without Carmelo.
And until recently when they got their hands on Rudy Fernandez and they re-signed Nene, their roster looked like it had like... six guys.
They actually almost looked better without Carmelo. They did. They actually looked better without Carmelo.
Because they're more of a team.
Yeah.
Dino Gallinari.
He's good.
I like Gallinari.
He might have a huge year now without those guys.
He could. That's...
And that point guard tandem is pretty slick.
Yeah. But you know
you can't win with just
you can't win when Gallinari. Three of your guys are in.
When will they give China?
You idiot.
Yeah. When will they give Nene the ball? I've been waiting for that for a long time.
You know, Nene,
give him the
is
touches.
A talented guy, and with Carmelo on his team, he never got touches. He always just battled, and he's kind of a garbage man. So you know, he's not the guy that you're gonna throw in the post like Bynum or Gasol or somebody like that who's gonna touch the ball every time down. But you're right; they could feature him a lot more, and he's a lot more talented offensively than they give him, you know, credit for. Whatever.
Then like Josh McRoberts, who gets a bunch of touches wherever he goes.
J Mac, baby.
J Mac
in the purple and gold. Speaking of which, we're going to be back. We'll talk. J Mac was a great college basketball player, and we're going to talk some college basketball. We'll talk a little bit about Cal Poly, our local team here. We'll also talk about the Pac-10 and
who's impressing us so
far. Who's impressing us? Luke, it's one of the deepest college basketball seasons that we've had in a while. A lot of talent out there. And
where in the world is Reese Nelson?
We'll be back. Fansmanship.com podcast.
Agree. I will struggle with your awesome till kingdom come. I start to run.
And we're back. Fansmanship.com podcast. Of course, on fansmanship.com and iTunes with Luke Johnson. I'm Owen Main. It's Sunday night. Tim Tebow lost today. That's the big story. And this weekend was a good college basketball weekend, Luke. It's a weekend when a lot of teams are getting kind of, after a big early season blitz, a lot of teams are getting set up for their conference, either playing some tough schools or maybe some not so tough schools, kind of trying to get their lineup set, get their guys healthy before the turn of the year. And usually right into the new year is when conference season starts. It's when the Big West starts. It's when the Pac-12 starts. Luke, talk to me a little bit about what stood out for you so far this year. I mean, this season to me started off, in my mind, with the North Carolina-Michigan State game that was played in the aircraft carrier. Talk to me about some things that have stood out for you this year so far in college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, this season really has culminated into this mess of not dominant but highly talented teams. I think Duke is a perfect example of that. 9-1. They've beaten
scorching hot.
They've beaten some really good teams. They have Coach K, who's the most, you know, the winningest coach in college basketball history. Right. But they lack that go-to scorer right now. And I think a lot of people are concerned about Duke. You know, Austin Rivers was sort of the hot name. And in all reality, as I've watched enough of Duke basketball this year, that guy just is a little bit too much of a me first kind of a player. He's not going to fit Coach K's system. And
is he a two or is he a one? That's the big question. Right?
He's not
6'2" two guard.
Well, I'll tell you right now, he's not a point guard. He likes to score. He's not a point guard. When I think of a tweener point guard, I think of Jay Williams, who was fantastic at Duke because he knew how to get guys involved, and then he also scored. Austin Rivers, you know, Doc Rivers' son. Austin Rivers is a guy who likes to score a little too much. I think for a Coach K system, Coach K likes to share the ball. That's why he has guys like Seth Curry, who also, you know, also Steph Curry's brother, younger brother, who is by no means a Steph Curry, but a guy who can, you know, step up and hit an occasional three or, you know, drop you 14 points or whatever. As far as Duke's concerned, I was interested in seeing if Miles Plumlee was going to really step up this year and become more of a force in the middle.
Miles is one of two Plumlee brothers on the Duke. Miles and Mason?
Mason.
Which one's the bigger one?
Mason's the bigger one, but Miles is a little more of the athletically
diverse, skilled. Yeah. So they're both, what, 6'10 or so?
Yeah, they're almost 7 foot. They have a long reach, too.
They're muy grande.
Miles Plumlee, and guys, I'm going into Duke because I think that their team kind of describes what it's like this year. Miles Plumlee, I thought, if he could step up and be that 15-10 guy in the post, which seemed far fetched compared to his, you know, stats, you know, career wise, but that 15-10 guy who blocks shots and can consistently score in the post, then Duke does have a legitimate shot to, you know, to win their second title in 3 years. He hasn't been that guy. He's an 8 point, 8 rebound, get in foul trouble, block a couple shots kind of player. He's talented, but he's not that go to guy. My point in saying all this is that Duke was one of those teams that's always heralded. Now North Carolina in the ACC also has been one of those teams that people thought was like, wow, I mean, this team is just incredibly...
A lot of guys coming back, very talented.
Yeah, I mean, Harrison Barnes, in my opinion, is the best player in the country.
He might have been, you know, number one, number two pick last year had he come out.
And he will be that this year. Phenomenally athletic. If you guys haven't seen Harrison Barnes play it, you got to. The guy is a 6'8", or 6'5", excuse me, 220-pound.
He reminds me of a bulked-up Grant Hill.
Yeah, he's good.
He's very good.
Really good. You have Drew Henson, the big fella, but skinny. What, about 210 pounds?
Seven-footer, yeah.
Jeez. But he blocks shots. He Defensive player of the year.
This is a team that's very talented, has a lot of players.
Yeah, because then you have the veteran leadership with Tyler Zeller.
Who lost the Ware Twins and got better. And we'll talk about UCLA in a second. But
the
point is, this is a deep group. This is a deep season.
The point is that it's deep because, you know, I was going to say North Carolina was the consensus number one in the preseason. But this is a team that has underachieved and lost a couple of games to some really poor teams. Why? Because they aren't that dominant team. They're that team that's very good, but not dominant. Ohio State, I think, is that team lacking Solinger. He's been struggling with back spasms and he's a great, you know, threat in the post.
Yeah, they just barely skated by the other night on the will of Kraft and some of those other guys. But yeah.
Now, you know, before I have Owen go ahead and, you know, just progress here to Pac-12 play and then Cal Poly play, I want to go ahead and just bring up a couple more teams, guys, that are interesting. Memphis, Pastner's team, has really underachieved this year. I was expecting big things from them.
Yeah, they've recruited really well the last couple
well.
Years.
I mean, after what happened with Cal,
they've been highly ranked recruits. You can only tell how well somebody recruited a number of years after.
And you have to remember, Calipari kind of just like took off in a huff.
Totally bailed, yeah.
I mean, he just was like gone after that Final Four or that championship appearance.
And the fact that Pastner's kept that program up is a testament to him.
Yeah, and he's got some uber talented young kids.
Sure.
Not panning out. Now, the team that I want to talk to you about a little bit, who I think everyone should pay attention to, because, wow, it's been a long time since this team's been hot, are the Indiana Hoosiers. Who have pretty much they've beaten everyone they've played. They're 11-0 so far this season. But most importantly, knocked off who?
Kentucky. Yeah.
Kentucky, who, I'm dropping the tunes, guys, not even knowing it. Hey, but they beat a Kentucky team that a lot of people thought was the best team in the country. Once again,
A talented group there. I mean, holy cow, they reload it.
But once again, it's the nature of the season.
Right.
And Indiana's back. Wow, how great. But once again, that lengthens Big Ten play. I mean, before you had Ohio State, Wisconsin, maybe Michigan State, if they could, you know, gel this season. Now all of a sudden you have Indiana, who's playing good basketball.
Sure.
You know,
like the football got a little bit deeper this year with the addition of Nebraska, and they actually had 12 teams. Indiana coming back is like getting a new school, because they've been, Tom Crean's team has been down for so long, and it's taken him a number of recruiting classes now to get guys who are going to fit into his system. He has a unique offensive system, a unique defensive system. Of course, I think he came from, was it Marquette?
Yes, Marquette.
He was D Wade's coach, I think, at Marquette.
He was.
And so, you know the guy can recruit if he could recruit D Wade. And Indiana's got a lot of really solid boosters and backers. They're not lacking for resources in basketball there.
And that team can shoot.
And that team can shoot. And they have basketball skills, and they probably have the right guys. And it's something I want to talk about when we talk about basketball itself, especially college basketball. And we'll see it in the NBA with the Lakers maybe not being as good as they were last year, because chemistry isn't the same. And I do want to talk about chemistry, Luke, if that's okay. Can I kind of go?
Go.
The Lakers might not be as good because, and I made the argument that Meta World Peace / Ron Artest didn't have what it took as far as chemistry to fit in with that group. And like I said, they won one championship and that was great, but that wasn't something that could be long lasting chemistry. In college basketball, chemistry is even more important. We saw a team like UCLA this year. Let's talk about them. Fall off the freaking map, okay? We have Ben Howland's squad, who had their leading scorer coming back, Reeves Nelson, and one player can wreck some chemistry and can wreak havoc on a whole program. And we see that, you know, guys like Drew Holiday have come in, you know, come through. Kevin Love has had some, you know, not so great things to say. I actually wrote a thing about it with Ben Howland on Fansmanship. I wrote a quick opinion piece that UCLA needs to figure out what direction they're going in. And the loss, or the Modesto forward, Reeves Nelson, super skilled, super talented, but not all there upstairs. The upstairs matters so much. And we can see that with guys like Nelson who are so good and talented. And I'll guarantee you, Luke, there are five or six guys every year who are good enough to play at Kentucky physically or who are good enough to play at North Carolina physically, but who probably don't even play Division I college basketball or not college basketball at all because they don't have it upstairs. So it is rare to find somebody who's got it upstairs and who has the mental, you know, and who has the physical acumen to make happen what they need to happen. So when it comes to UCLA, I think they've taken themselves out of the Pac-12 contention already before the season's even started losing their best player. They gained two players. They gained two guys who came from North Carolina. They didn't get along at North Carolina. And I'm kind of finding out that maybe there was a reason for that. They're not bad players. They're great piece guys. They can give, you know, a piece here and there, but they're not, you know, they're not great. And
yeah, there was a reason. Reason Roy was like, "Hey, you know, go ahead and
get out of there, guys, if you need to." Yeah. So,
And I think that UCLA embodies, I think, what the direction the Pac-12 basketball has been in recently. I mean, Ben Hallen and UCLA have been in all these Final Fours the last 10 years. Three in 10 years.
Three in a row.
Three in a row. Yeah. At one time, Pac-10 or now Pac-12 was, in my opinion, a conference that, alongside the ACC and the Big Ten, the ACC and the Big East,
sure,
was a conference that, you know, top-notch talented players
part of the last decade,
wanted to play at. I mean, they wanted to be a UCLA Bruin. They wanted to be even a Stanford Cardinal.
Arizona Wildcat, a California Golden Bear, a
Washington Husky,
right.
You know, a Lorenzo's team. But UCLA falling apart this year with these players who don't have it upstairs, it seems to be the direction the Pac-12 has been going in. It's just not a deep league. There's not that tell-all. There's not even a top 25 team a lot of times.
USC kind of come up and then go down hard when Tim Floyd had all that accusations and Kevin O'Neill's trying to rebuild it. Of course, we'll talk about Cal Poly in a second, but they beat USC this year. You see a squad like Washington State, who Tony Bennett was so good with.
They had a year or two there.
Four or five years in a row there at Washington State when they were pretty competitive, and their coach left and they fell back off the map. He's at Virginia now. Oregon had a couple good years, and
they score a lot of points for a couple of years.
The Luke Ridenour years. And then they fell off the map. So Washington's been able to hang in
there.
And
Luke Jackson. That was a good team.
Yeah. Luke Jackson kind of looked like Legolas to me from Lord of the Rings. I don't know why I make that.
He did, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's the ears or something.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, the Pac-10's had a lot of young talent leave, too, over the last 4 years. None more apparent than at UCLA, where they've lost Kevin Love, Drew Holiday, Farmar went early. All these guys, you know, it seems like they stayed for a while, but they didn't. They left early. And then to boot, you have two guys on UNLV right now, in Chase Standback and the big man. I forget his name. Mosier. Is it Mosier?
Mosier. Yeah.
Standback like a double-double. Mosier's going like 19 and 10, and Standback's scoring like 22 a game for UNLV.
And UNLV's beating people they beat.
They beat Cal Poly.
And they beat North Carolina.
So the UNLV loss doesn't look so bad for the Mustangs. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, I wanted to get your take quickly, you know, 30 seconds maybe, on Arizona, who was, you know, 1995 to 2002, maybe 7 to 10 year span there with Lute Olson, was a perennial powerhouse. Across the country. I mean,
got to the tournament for like almost 20 straight years, I want to say.
Yeah. And won that title in 97 with Mike Bibby.
And Miles Simon.
Lute Olson goes through all the crap he went through, bows out quickly. They had that year last year that looked like it was promising. Then they lose Williams. He goes pro.
So what's up with Arizona? Their recruiting class around Williams was really good. They had five freshmen that started at one point. I think it was last year or the year before. So they're going to be okay. And the Pac-10, really, when it comes to talent, is coming down to at the end. It's coming down to Arizona, and it's coming down to Washington. And a team like UCLA, I could see doing something silly like winning the tournament, getting hot, you know, Laz Jones and some of those Lamb progressing a little bit for UCLA. But when it comes down to it, the top two teams in the Pac-10 are Arizona and Washington for my money. Moving on real quick, and real quick before break, I do want to talk about Cal Poly. Speaking of teams, you know, like UCLA, who aren't maybe there mentally and who are trying to get there, you have a team, Cal Poly, who from a chemistry and a team standpoint has been clicking since the year started. Okay, this is a team who has nobody scoring more than like 12 points a game.
11.
Nobody scoring more than 11 points a game.
David Hanson is leading the team at 11 points a game.
11 points a game. So you're talking about, you know, nobody scoring more than 11 points a game, and yet you're 8-3. You just beat Fresno State at Fresno State. You're probably looking at, you know, a number 2 or 3 seed potentially if everything goes the way it should in the Big West. You're looking at a 2 or 3 seed in the Big West tournament. Of course, the Big West has Long Beach State and UCSB, both of which are really good teams and aren't going to be easy. But you have a team that's fun to watch. And here on the Central Coast, that's not something we've been able to say before the last couple of years. One thing that I noticed 2 years ago is a team that guys clearly understand their roles, and Cal Poly's on a roll, beating Fresno State by 18 or 19 points.
Yeah, and
at the Save Mart Center.
And to be honest, I mean, I am really excited about the Coach Calero era. I mean, this is a guy who's doing something right. I mean, when have we really ever had much to root for? In all honesty, we've had a couple good teams that have come through.
Varney Dennis,
yes, that era. But besides that, we've had some rough years. And what I like about Coach Calero's teams is they all do seem to know their role. You know, like I said, David Hansen's leading team is scoring at 11 points per game. Amari Furman isn't even scoring the way that we think he's capable of.
Yeah, he's going to go off for over 20 in a couple of games here.
But he's playing poised, and he's leading that team with hardly any turnovers, and he's sharing the basketball. You know, Will Taylor's, you know,
Coach Calero calls him the head of the snake.
The head of the snake. But what I like about this team, you know, and guys, just to give you a quick recap, they beat USC in a grinded out ugly affair, 42-36. They lose to UNLV kind of badly.
Who then beats North Carolina, and it doesn't look so bad.
But here's what I like about Cal Poly now with Coach Calero. There's a toughness that wasn't there before. They lose to UNLV, you know, bad by 23. They reel off 3 straight wins, Morgan State, blah, 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 blah.
They win a consolation championship at the Las Vegas.
They then lose a very tight game to a really good St. Mary's team at home. And you and Andy actually at Front Fansmanship covered that game, correct?
Yep.
And I mean, according to you guys, from what I read and just talking to you guys, a few turnovers is really what decided that game, or maybe even a couple.
Yeah, there was a 4 or 5 minute stretch, and those are 4 or 5 minute stretches that more experienced teams and teams that have been there get through, but
this is St. Mary's, who's becoming a consistent,
about 5 or 6 Aussies on their team, yeah,
who's becoming a consistent team in the tourney, and they're making a run, you know, sometimes to the Sweet 16. So that's a very good St. Mary's team. Here's what I like: they lose that tough one. A lot of teams will be like Cal Poly, might become deflated, say, screw it, we're done, right? They beat a tough San Jose State team at home, or excuse me, on the road.
The
point is
they have a guy like Matt Titchnell coming off the bench. Their depth is the big deal. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, the point being is that, you know, anytime, you know, you're not used to having success like I think Cal Poly's been having, you lose a nail biter to a team like St. Mary's, most teams become deflated, just toss it in.
You have the chance to go in the tank.
Yeah. They win a really hard game, you know, after a loss like that to San Jose State. They blow out Menlo and then just beat Fresno State by 19. This really wasn't present, I don't think, in Cal Poly's program, Graham, in recent years.
The bounce back, the toughness.
That we can succeed. You know, we can, okay, so yeah, so what? We lost a game. We can come back and really win some games here.
And Luke, I think it's the product of what I was saying earlier. The fact that you have chemistry and that you have, I think, 5 seniors with chemistry. You have Will Donahue, Will Taylor, David Hanson, Amari Furman, and Jordan Lewis, all of whom are seniors.
Well, don't scare me like that, because what happens next year?
Well, there's some stuff going on next year. We can talk about that later. They got a couple big men coming in that are freshmen. One kid who's going to prep school this year. So he's kind of going to be an older freshman.
We got a kid from Mission coming in, right?
Kid from Mission, Zach
Local,
Ullman.
Right,
yeah,
on, Zach Ullman.
Absolutely. 6'7", cool. Who Calero compared to Hanson the other day. That being said, look it up. Try to find on the internet somewhere. Wednesday night, Cal Poly is going to be playing, and Coach Claro's team is going to be playing against DePaul.
Big game, big game.
And pay attention to Amari Furman. I wrote an article, and the title of the article was "That's Amari."
And, huge game.
And Amari is going to be having to not turn the ball over, and on a road game against a Big East opponent.
Huge game.
No turnovers is going to be a huge deal.
A team who just lost to a pretty dang good Ole Miss team by two in DePaul. So, big game.
We're going to be back. We're well into today's podcast. It's Sunday night. I'm Owen Main along with Luke Johnson. Yes. The RFansmanship.com podcast. We'll be back.
A lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision, and the people on the streets they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up.
We're back on fansmanship.com podcast.
You give your love.
Final segment, Luke Johnson, along with me, Owen Main.
And once again, guys, Andy Stevens is doing holiday affairs.
Andy, where are you?
Where are you, Andy?
What are you doing that you shouldn't be doing?
Drinking spiked eggnog and eating cookies.
It's a possibility.
Possibility.
We should all be so lucky.
Hey, guys, it is that time, and we are, only a week away from Christmas. Wow.
Happy holidays to y'all.
Happy holidays.
Whatever holiday you celebrate.
It's been a big year, I think, for all three of us, probably, but even for Owen and I. I mean, we both had our 30th birthdays.
Don't remind me.
I know. And we're going to talk about a couple of things that have to do with age, probably. But, you know, we both have, hit that big 3-0. It's Christmas time now. We're both married. Some stuff's going on. But one thing that we want to talk about quickly here that Owen really wants to muse on a little bit is this bowl structure we have with the BCS and college football.
Yeah.
And it has to do with the holidays a bit because this is when the bowl time is happening.
Right.
You know, Owen, go ahead.
Luke, when we were younger, back 17 years ago, I can remember, you know, when I was 12 or 13.
God, wow.
That would have been the...
We're almost to that point where we say, you know, 20 years ago. Isn't that crazy?
That would have been like, say, 1996. Ugh. We'll say 1996. I was 15 then. Say 94, 95, something like that.
Wow.
I can picture myself sitting in front of the TV... Maybe my freshman year of high school, that would have been 95, 96. And I can picture myself on New Year's Day saying to myself, I'm going to watch football today. I am going to do nothing but sit at home. I'm going to watch some football. And I remember I sat there and I flipped through the channels and I, you know, ate lunch and I kept flipping through channels and football games and I could pick the best game to watch because they aren't all good. Not all the bowl games are fun to watch.
No, a lot of them aren't.
Newsflash, okay?
Yeah.
A lot of the bowl games are blowouts. And
no
so,
offense.
So back in the day when the Cotton Bowl and the Peach Bowl and the
Sugar Bowl.
The Sugar Bowl and the what's the one
you said
Miami?
The Orange Bowl, right?
The Orange Bowl, yeah.
And the Rose Bowl.
And the Rose Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl. They were in the Cotton Bowl. Did I say the Cotton Bowl already?
You did. Yeah. But that was about it.
Because I can picture Cade McNown in the Cotton Bowl.
Yes.
So you had all these games going on throughout the day. Maybe there were four slots, you know, throughout the day. There was your early slot, say like the 10 o'clock games Pacific time. There was like the 12:30 or 1 o'clock games. And the networks just basically had football on all day on New Year's. Nowadays, you turn on the TV. It's what's the date today, Luke? The 17th? 18th?
The 17th, correct.
17th. And there are bowl games on almost every night between now and New
Year's. In fact, tonight or today, it looks like it's Wyoming and Temple.
That was yesterday.
Oh, yesterday. Oh, so it's the 18th.
It's
today.
The 18th.
Okay, so
what day is this?
Okay, so on the 20th, we have the Beef O'Brady's Bowl.
Okay, so here's what you're going to get for the next...
FIU versus Marshall.
Here's what you're going to get for the next three weeks, is that leading up to New Year's, the next 2 weeks, you're going to get these games that's one game a night. And if you really want to schedule out every single night from here on out to not hang out with family, to not do all the holiday things, then you can turn on the TV and you can always find a football game on. But that football game may be, you know, Southern Miss versus...
It's meaningless.
It's meaningless. And I know
in the grand scheme of things...
I know it's not meaningless to those players. I get
no,
that.
No, and it's not meaningless to those few fans, but it's meaningless in the grand scheme, you know, from the grand level. It's meaningless.
And this is what makes the college basketball tournament so special, Luke, is that you have four games at a time for four straight days.
Oh, it's heaven.
And
honestly, round one is my favorite.
And the network switches back and forth between
rounds.
Oh,
isn't it fun?
And I used to be able to do that on New Year's Day with football. It was the one day of the year that I could do it with college football. I could flip back and forth and find the right game and see the one that was coming down to the wire. And I knew there was going to be at least one or two that came down to the wire.
Which is why, you're actually bringing up a point that I want to make quick muse here, which is why I thought this year for college basketball was going to be huge, because people are really upset about the bowl structure, about how drawn out and how boring it's become in some ways. The fact that on January 9th is when you have the title game. Come on, January 9th? It's like, what's happening January 9th? I mean, and I thought it was going to be a big year because people are disappointed in the bowl structure right now.
Right.
The NBA wasn't going to be happening. The NFL's had some rule changes that have made people kind of go, maybe kind of rethink their NFL love. I thought, wow, college basketball and that March Madness was going to be like, it was going to be the glory moment for college basketball.
Here was the tipping point for me for college football. It was the BCS, when it first came out, had three BCS games on New Year's Day. And one of the BCS games was the national championship. And that happened on the 2nd. That happened the day after New Year's back then.
Yeah.
So New Year's was on the 1st. There were all the games still, and they just pushed one of those games back to the
Which makes sense, because it gives you it kind of builds, but
that
it's only for a day.
That was cool, because there were a lot of games still on New Year's. Now you've got them spread out before New Year's. You got them spread out after New Year's, so that you'll have one bowl game a night, and that bowl game may suck. And I'm sorry.
And in fact, Owen, I don't know if you know this. I'm sorry I cut you off.
Go ahead.
But
no,
this
please.
Is important, because you're musing on New Year's. We have New Year's Eve games here. We do have we have Texas A&M Northwestern. We have the Sun Bowl. Blah, blah,
ooh,
blah.
The Sun Bowl.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. No games that matter. And then January 2nd. So we skip January 1st.
Because it's on a... What day is it?
What day is it on? I don't know.
Sunday.
Oh.
NFL. It's going to be January 1st.
Oh, so that kind of...
Is the Rose Bowl even on January 1st?
Nope.
Rose Bowl's on the 2nd.
There are no games
on
the
1st. And that's traditional, I think, that when the 1st is on... Though when the 1st is on a Sunday, I think they play everything on a Monday. That being said...
Why not schedule it on New Year's Eve then?
Well, because you got to have the Rose Parade on New Year's Day and then
the Rose Bowl
is after
right.
that. But the point is that you're going to go all the way to the 9th, right, Luke?
Yeah.
All the way to the freaking 9th
of
January.
On the 6th, you have... finally on the 6th, you
it's
have...
It's like playing the Super Bowl in March.
Okay, guys, listen to this lineup. Finally by the 6th.
So on the 2nd, there's a bunch of games.
And then,
how many games on the 2nd?
There's four.
Only four games on New Year's.
And then
what
you
the
skip,
hell?
And then you, well, it's not really New Year's either.
Right.
And then you skip 4 days.
Oh, okay.
And you have the Cotton Bowl.
On Friday night?
K-State and Arkansas.
What is that? What night's the Cotton Bowl on?
Well, Sunday's the 2nd, so 3rd is the Monday. Thursday.
Seriously? They're waiting until Thursday to play the freaking Cotton
Bowl?
And the Cotton
Kansas
Bowl's
State,
not even a BCS game.
K-State versus Arkansas. Whoa, wow, big whoop.
Disgust.
Yeah. Okay. Then January 7th, the next day, you have a huge game. It's going to blow your mind, Owen.
Tell me.
The BBVA Compass Bowl. You have Southern Miss.
Like I said, Southern Miss.
Versus Pittsburgh. I can't even believe I just said
that. Where does that get played?
Birmingham, Alabama.
How do they deserve to play, not just on New Year's, play it on New Year's? Okay. All right, keep going.
January 8th, we have another epic game.
Epic battle.
We have the GoDaddy.com Bowl.
GoDaddy.
Northern Illinois versus Arkansas State.
Did Cal Poly play Northern? No, they played Southern Illinois. Maybe Northern. I don't know. I forget.
Played in Mobile, Alabama.
Mobile. Okay.
Okay. And then...
The 9th? Or the 8th still?
Okay. And then on the... Oh, you know what? Excuse me. Okay. Let me go ahead and backtrack here. I want to give you some of the larger games.
Okay.
January 3rd, we do have the Sugar Bowls, the Michigan-Virginia Tech game.
On the 3rd, which
the
is the fourth, Tuesday.
The 4th, we have...
Wednesday.
The 4th, we have... Orange Bowl, which is Clemson, West Virginia.
That's the worst BCS game this year.
Absolutely. The second, we also are going to include the Oklahoma State Stanford game and the Wisconsin Oregon game. Rose Bowl, Wisconsin Oregon, Fiesta Bowl is Oklahoma State Stanford.
Those are going to be the two most fun bowls to watch this year, and I'm glad that they're on New Year's.
But the point being is that even with the inclusion, I miss those games because this is sort of a weird web page I'm looking at. But even with the inclusion of those larger games in the on the second, the third, and the fourth, you just have this messed up arrangement of. Crap. I mean, why do we have the BBVA Compass Bowl on the 7th and the GoDaddy Bowl on the 8th? Then finally on the 9th, we do get to the game that really does matter, I guess, unless you're
they already played it.
Unless you're Oklahoma State.
Yeah, they already played that game.
LSU and Alabama. 9-6. It was a boring game. And
yay. Yeah, pretty much.
I say just give it to LSU.
It's overkill, Luke.
Give it to LSU.
It's overkill. And it's overkill, and this is simple.
Remember
when
LSU knocked off Oregon at the beginning of the year, and Oregon was like kind of a title favorite?
Yeah. LSU's done everything that they can.
What about Oklahoma State? God.
What I want to say, the reason is, of course, because of TV dollars. I mean, it's because if you're the only game that's on TV that night and you're the only football game, America has proven that it will watch that game and that you can make a lot of money on television advertisements, which means that a lot of money goes in the pockets of the people who are sponsoring those bowls and the people who are running those
and
bowls. A lot of them claim to do a lot of charity work, and a lot of them do, but a lot of them have CEOs of the bowls that make millions of dollars. It's crazy.
Charity, barity, whatever.
It's crazy. It's crazy corrupt and crooked.
But you were just like talking NCAA. About filling pockets with a lot of money.
Yeah.
And what I've been going through, because I'm 30 years old, and I'm married, and it tends to happen, right?
You're not filling your pockets, Luke.
No, I've been unfortunately filling my mouth too much.
Nom, 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 nom.
Yeah. And guys, I'm sort of known by my friends as like the workout guy. I go to the gym quite a bit. I'm active. I'm the guy who's like the health
Luke's
nut.
Done like training before. He's trained people and stuff. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you know, when I used to coach with Tim, he always would talk about, oh, you're such a health nut, blah, blah, blah. And you go to the gym all the time. You know, teach me your whatever you do and all that. And I am, it's a compliment. I really appreciate that because I like doing it. But since I've been married and then now I've hit 30, which is sort of like a wall. Sorry to the guys who aren't 30 yet.
He's a wall, dude.
Sorry.
Luke and I both hit 30 this year. It hurts.
I've put on that 20 pounds that married men just tend to put on. And even me, who people thought, oh, if one guy's not going to put it on, it's Luke. He won't put it on. And I've put that on, guys. And so my New Year's resolution, forget the bowls for now. I want to talk about something that's more important. It's my diet. My New Year's resolution is, unlike the corporate men who fill their pockets with money, I'm going to quit that. I'm going to quit filling my mouth with sugar. And I'm going to show charity by not eating the sugar and give it to somebody else.
Say what?
Yes.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
And unlike the bowl structure, which we've been talking about, is stretched all the way from the 17th of December to January 9th. It's this long, drawn-out affair. I'm going to do this as quick as possible.
Scorching hot.
Yes, so I am scorching hot again for my wife. But I am going to do this as quick as possible. Like Owen said, it's going to be a quick-hitting process. Back in the day when he had the four major bowl games on the 1st of January, and then there was maybe that title game on the 2nd.
You could commit for a short period of time.
Yes, it's going to happen quickly.
Fun. Yeah.
It's not going to be this drawn-out experience.
Right now. It's going to be so hot right now.
It's not this drawn-out Jenny Craig experience where I'm just eating a little bit under what I should be eating to lose
one-tenth
of a pound.
You want to eat a lot under and work out a lot and drop it quick.
So how about you, Otrain? You got any New Year's reses?
Mine's related to that. It's a little less extreme than doing it all in like a day and a half. dropping 20 LBs in a day and a half. Mine actually has to do with something I took up about a year and a half ago, and that's cycling. I rode my bike a lot this last year. I probably rode upwards of 1,000 to 1,500 miles on my bike.
Wow.
Which isn't that much when you consider that
your legs must be like rocks.
Yeah, I rode 2 centuries, so that's 200 right there, like in 2 days.
Wow.
But that being said, it seems like a lot, but it actually, once you start riding, it's not that much. It's like, divide it by 52 and tell me how many a week that is. That's like That's like a 10-mile, it's like a 20-mile bike ride a week, okay? Or 2 10-mile bike rides a week.
So that's like from slow to like Los Osos and back.
That's 20 miles, yeah. If you went all the way to Los Osos, yeah. So my goal this year is to get to 2,000 miles, 2,000 to 2,500 in a year, which is going to be more like 40 miles a week on average. So I'm going to have to...
Now, is this just like... okay, I want to understand this New Year's res. Is this twofold? Or is this singular? I mean, is this just like a goal that's just athletic, like an athletic goal?
No.
Or is this also because you want to slim down a little bit? Or what is
it? You know, it's I want to be healthy. I mean, the slim down thing, I'm going to have to stop eating so many calories if that's going to happen. And making my total...
Stop eating cookies. Stop eating cookies, Owen. I'm with you. I eat cookies too.
I made a batch of cookies last weekend, and I blacked out for about 2 hours at some point, and over half the cookies were gone, and I woke up feeling kind of bloated, so I didn't really know what happened. I can eat like eat like 15 to 20 in a sitting if I need to, and that's without working
out.
That's
a dark confession.
It is, dude. I could do it though. Those Toll Houses are amazing, especially how I make them.
Were you ever chunky when you were a kid?
I wasn't ever chunky.
I had a phase where I was like a fat boy.
Right. I went through some growth spurts where like my back didn't catch up, and my core strength hasn't been very strong ever. But I've never been. I don't think I've ever been like the chunky guy. In like eighth grade, I went out and. When basketball started in eighth grade, my back was super weak and it actually went out and I was walking around like an old man for like probably like a good solid 2 or 3 weeks. Right at the beginning of basketball season, I was like hobbling like an old man, and actually my back started hurting this morning too, and I was thinking about it. Like it hurt to get on my desk. Like and I was walking around with it was pretty great. But that being said, I think, you know, it's a twofold thing, Luke. If I'm working out every day, then not eating as many calories will have a bigger effect. So
I'm telling you,
it's not just to lose weight; it's to be healthier.
Absolutely.
And if I do a healthier,
and it's about like, you know, retraining the mind.
Right.
It's very meditative and disciplinary. You know, it's
absolutely.
The way it is.
And there's a really good, you know, there's a really good fitness radio program on the Central Coast here.
Put me in, Coach.
It's no, it's an actual one. It's called Living the Run. It's on the 1280 out here in San Luis. And Ryan Ferrand does a pretty good job of hosting it, and they talk about a lot of good stuff that are kind of like healthy habits for endurance sports. And so for me, you know, getting in and getting my body into a place that I can handle 2,000 miles is something that I have to do, like stretching every night for. I have to like be at home, and so just being kind of cognizant, I guess, or thinking about it, I'm hoping helps me.
Yeah, I mean, I know for me, it's just kind of like a recentering of myself. I mean, I need to just kind of come back to that original way that I enjoyed living my life, which was healthy. And, you know, I just need to stop eating sugar so much, which I used to not do.
And you're telling the world about it. So everybody, if you see Luke on the street and you see him,
and I'm stuffing my face with cookies,
he's
telling me to stop
or something, then you gotta.
But I mean, for me, you know, for you, it, like you said, you have that, you know, that inspiration. For me, it's just really simple. I enjoy eating healthy. You know, get back to that, just eating cleaner, you know, with a cleaner diet. I already have the workout part down.
Right.
Just eating cleaner and maybe drinking a little bit less beer and
less alcohol does help too. Yeah,
it does.
When I don't drink alcohol, if I go like a couple months and
you'll drop like 5 or 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Right?
So. And those 20 pounds that I gained, you know, you said you gained your 20 now. I gained mine when I was like 23.
Really?
Was,
already at 23?
Yeah, it was when I moved away and
that was when I was just peaking.
And started like, you know, and there was beer more consistently.
But you know what? My father-in-law actually wanted me to tell you this, and Andy, but Andy's not here, but Andy will be listening at least to some of this and hopefully this part. My father-in-law, before we go, he did want to encourage us. I was talking about hitting the wall at 30. He was laughing because he's in his early 50s. He's like 53. And he said, you want to know about hitting a wall? Just turned 50. But he was chuckling because he goes, you know, when I was 30 through 37 was like my peak, actually. He said, you know, physically I felt the best. I was in the best shape of my life. And yet I was working full time. I had kids, blah, blah, blah. So
structure's good.
So maybe you and I have just gotten lazy in some areas, but maybe 30 isn't so bad after all. You know,
that's what I'm hoping. It's a nice thought. It's a nice thought for the end of this Sunday edition of the Fansmanship podcast.
And for all you 8 people out there who listen, I want to thank you for
8.35.
I want to thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. If you guys don't mind, and if you guys think we're good enough, you know, maybe share it with friends, family, this podcast.
Because we made it through the first hour and 13 minutes of this podcast.
Because we do enjoy it, not only for ourselves, but we do enjoy it hopefully because you guys do get a laugh or maybe have some point that matters to you sports wise.
Yeah, we want to hear what you think. So email us. You can reach Luke at fansmanship.com. Owen@fansmanship.com. Andy@fansmanship.com. We all have Twitter accounts. There's a Fansmanship Twitter account too. Hit us up on any of that. We'd love to hear what you have to say.
And then especially locally, if you are local, we are at a lot of the Cal Poly games. You'll see us there. We appreciate Cal Poly sports, even local sports, high school sports. So if you want to know some stuff, go ahead and ask us.
Or if you have a good story, let us know.
If you have a good story, let us know.
We try to have as many articles as we can. We have guest writers. Heck, if you're interested in guest writing, if you're a fan, hit us up, and that opportunity is out there. It's been fun, Luke.
It's always fun.
You know, we missed Andy today, but it still has been a good time.
We missed Andy. I mean, we did have a good time, but I got to say, I really appreciate it when us three are together. It really kind of jives well. So,
absolutely,
Andy.
Absolutely.
Andy will, you know, he'll be back next time.
Andy, we'll see you next time. Yep. And to all you out there, we'll see you next time. Fansmanship.com podcast.
Peace.
Hi, my name is Chucky Atkins, and I approve this message.
You just got Chucky Atkins'd.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.